Welcome on to Hollinger and Duncan. If you are listening to the free pod, I want to let you know that this is going to be the last day to get the special one-time only John Hollinger pre-sale. We've had overwhelming response to that, so we extended it for another week, but it will be ending as soon as I hit send on tonight's podcast after the games. So jump on Dunkdown Prime. That's where you can get every Hollinger and Duncan episode. And I assure you that although the LA Lakers do not have any, we have plenty of lasers on this team between me and John and Danny LaRue and Dan Feldman. John, you've worked at basketball for a long time. Have you heard that phrase before, laser, to describe a good shooter? I was like,
you know what? I never heard anyone say that. No, that was really interesting. I never heard anybody use that term.
I mean, Poku is like kind of a laser, maybe like a not that accurate yeah, right. one, but like the way I guess I've heard like an announcer, oh, he lasers it in. Like that's
I've heard it more, you know, you describe it more with passes, right? Like guys throwing cross-court lasers, you know, but maybe that's the problem with the Lakers. They're trying to shoot lasers instead of rainbows and arcs and parabolas. Yeah,
they got to get the NOAA machine. But although actually LeBron, he worked with that a lot. I remember there was a story years ago about how he was working on his free throws with Ray Allen to get it like the exact perfect 45 degree arc. So speaking of perfect, John and I will get to our predictions later on here. But first we need to talk about the rookie extensions. We have not had a chance to discuss that yet on Dunked On Prime between me and Danny. So we are coming at it fresh. We'll talk about the extensions. We'll talk about the non-extensions. What extension most intrigued you? I thought there were some really interesting ones this year.
The most intriguing one has to be Kevin Porter's, right?
Yes, I would say so. Though there was one I thought was pretty close. But yes, that was, what is the structure there?
So $15.86 million guaranteed the first year, plus $2.4 million, it looks like, in likely incentives. So basically, it's a contract that pays him $18 million a year, basically, most likely, for the 4 years after this one. Except, at the end of 2024, the Rockets can cut bait on the last 3 years, or they can pick up the next 2 years right then. And then a year later, they can bail on the 26-27 season. So it seems to me, like, to not pick up a guarantee a full year out, like, something really bad would have to happen. But that tipping point at the end of 24, it looks like, where they pick up the 2 years at once, from my understanding of the contract, that's a really key point. And I think it just stems from the fact that Kevin Porter is really talented, but some of the stuff you hear on him on the background, some of the reason he fell to the 30th pick in the draft, the reason Cleveland traded him in the first place, is that he's been a little bit difficult to deal with, let's say. There's been some concerns about just him, you know, fitting in with what the coaches want to do in the locker room and everything. So that's why this contract is structured the way it is. I thought it was a really creative way for Houston to get him, like, retain his rights for these next 4 years without having to fully commit themselves necessarily. And I do think the non-guarantee has a little bit of teeth in it at that tipping point in 24, whereas a lot of these contracts are set up when you've seen contracts with partial guarantees, a lot of them are set up in such a way that the team would never realistically ever cut the guy.
Right.
And it's just more to, you know, satisfy. It's a thing to satisfy the owner, basically, more than anything else. This one has some actual teeth in it where they can legitimately cut bait on him at the end of next year if they don't like where this is going.
So much to unpack here. And again, let's reiterate that. So obviously he finishes his rookie scale deal this year at $3 million. He was the 30th pick in the draft, as you mentioned. So has made, you know, about $10 million or so in his career, not a ton. So this is enough where, if managed properly, he could, you know, that's enough for life. Although you would think if they're not picking up the guarantee, then maybe he's not managing things properly. But you know, even as recently as last year, he's been better in Houston. He credited the way Houston has approached it with saving his life. Steven Silas teared up after discussing it. You know, clearly there's a lot of emotions there, but he has his struggles. And even last year, he didn't finish a game because he was unhappy with the way the coaching staff was proceeding. And so the team surely felt like they needed some protections here. However, Kevin Porter has also shown some flashes of being a really high level of guard. And I really applaud the organization for the level of creativity and his representation as well, because I think he felt like the approach that I went in the mock off season was I was going to demand, you know, 3 years guaranteed at kind of third guard money as a way of acknowledging that there had been these issues. But maybe that's not enough upside for Kevin Porter Jr., given some of the offensive talent that he's shown and the fact that he's been a starting point guard for a year and a half here for Houston. And he has a lot of ability. So this is a way to give him the upside of being paid as probably what'll be a low end starter, maybe even kind of a third guard by the end of the contract.
Yes.
If he comes through and, you know, he's got these reachable incentives as well. And also then still gives him some guaranteed money at least, right? Because that's what you're kind of afraid of as your representation and maybe even as he himself. But this is enough that he's getting something. And also protecting the organization. I really applaud him, his representation, and Houston for finding this deal in this creative way that was acceptable to all parties, because his situation as a talented, though volatile guy was a difficult one. And I really hope it works out for everyone, obviously, but this is a really impressive structure to me.
I agree. Great job by the Houston front office. And we'll see where this goes, but they didn't overcommit themselves just to throw themselves a parade for getting Porter in the first place. So I thought that was really good too.
We saw maybe one or two
examples where teams did that we'll get into.
Yeah. Or the other thing where they doubled down on maybe investing too much in the player to begin with,
yes.
Throwing good money after bad, possibly. But a couple other things on this one. Porter Jr.'s cap hold was small, $9.6 million. Houston was going to have in the mid-60s in cap space. His number should be 15.9 to start. So they cost themselves $6 million, but to go from $66 million to $60 million in cap space, and they still have a little bit more other things they could do if they needed to open up a little bit more space than that. Or if things really went wrong this year, they could just stretch that money. If you're just so desperate to, you know, open up that $6 million to get two max slots or whatever. So it doesn't really matter if the extra space that they're using up here from a cap perspective, they still have more than enough flexibility, and they do expect, it seems like, to be active in free agency. And then, yeah, I think that, again, what you're saying about the trigger date bears repeating. 1 year is guaranteed, and then after the first year, so basically 2 years from two seasons from now, they have to decide on guaranteeing the next two seasons all at once. And so that's a good inflection point. And if he's shown enough there that they really, because they, I mean, from Houston's perspective, just on the floor, they're not really sure if he's going to be part of their plans. Maybe they draft Scoot Henderson this year. So having that flexibility, I think, is good. And maybe Porter Jr. at that point, if he's not going to be the starter there, they're probably not going to, or at least in competition for that, they're not going to guarantee that. And then he can also go somewhere else and maybe, you know, be a,
I was
going to
say,
this
is also potentially a tradable contract. Like, even if they, you know, like if he had a good year and then they were in position to draft Scoot Henderson anyway, like this is a tradable contract too. So I thought they helped themselves there.
Yeah, I would say actually, I would go back to the structure that the Pelicans had with Josh Hart.
Yes.
As that was one of the more creative ones. And I think that now is kind of making some of these other structures acceptable, allowing teams and agents to think outside the box a little bit more like that. I think we're going to look back on that as kind of a pioneering structure. Josh Hart's situation was a little bit different, with just 1 year fully guaranteed and then a non-guarantee and then a non-guaranteed team option. So that's, we'll probably see more of these. Second most intriguing contract to you.
When we say the word intriguing, all right, my fellow Wahoo DeAndre Hunter, who I will see play against Kevin Porter Jr. in a couple hours here. I thought this contract valued him as though everything had gone totally according to the plan since they had taken him with the fourth pick.
Well, yeah, this is basically, give me the numbers on it again, please.
It is, looks like $90 million guaranteed, $5 million in incentives. So you're talking about a starting number just very slightly over 20 in 2023-24, plus $1.25 million in incentives. And then it escalates to $25 million in 25-26. I have not seen what the incentives are in this contract. I don't know if you have. No. I can't comment yet on how likely they are to be attained, but they're small enough that I don't think they really matter to the overall discussion of this deal.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's been just as good as Mikal Bridges, right? That's why he's getting essentially the same contract.
Like, you could exchange them for each other and you'd hardly notice, right? Both starting small forwards on a national champion. Both, you know, on teams that made at least one deep playoff run, although Hunter was injured when the Hawks made theirs. Yeah, so like exactly the same, right?
Well, you mentioned the idea of kind of doubling down. They drafted a number four. They made a big trade to get him. They traded 8 and 17. They took on Solomon Hill's contract, a couple of second round picks as well. And I will say, at least he's flashed at a level at a few times that's kind of close to this, like last year's playoff series.
Had a good series against Miami, yeah. Had a pretty good preseason, had a good start to his second year. On the other hand, you're going out on a long way on a guy who's had some pretty persistent knee issues already.
Yeah, that's kind of the issue, that the health is a problem. It doesn't appear to be any protection for this at all. Also, the Hawks are not exactly awash in flexibility, but perhaps they're kind of in the bird rights trap even a little bit early with him. I guess there was just a concern, like, hey, if he has a big year, and maybe this is also something, John, you mentioned he had a good preseason, where maybe he just came into camp, he was healthy, he was playing well, and that kind of informed this thing, because this was right at the deadline.
Yeah, I think there probably was some level of fear that if he becomes a free agent and let's say he commands a salary that they can't pay because of the tax, how are they filling that spot? I would argue, like, you've been getting mid-level exception production the whole time anyway, so what the hell's the difference between, right? Between just signing somebody for the MLE to fill that
although
spot.
I mean, they're like, you can't even get a starter-ish guy. Like, ask the Cavs. They've been trying to find a small forward with the MLE for the past 3 years and just haven't been able to find one. So although the Hawks are a little bit better than the Cavs were during that period, you know, maybe you could find someone. But
I look at Slo-Mo, who signed for the MLE twice. I do think it's possible. You have to dig a little.
But he's a four, though. He can't shoot at the level of a three. I mean, this is... Hunter, at least, you know, mm-hmm. has flashed on defense and he's flashed on offense enough to maybe believe. It's just, you know, you would. Well, all right, let me ask you this. You're running the Hawks. What would your final offer have been?
I thought he was going to get like $60 million over four. I thought he was going to get like, you know, just something a little above MLE and call it good. And otherwise, you'll take it to the summer. Like, they are so locked in on this team now. Like, they're pushing the tax next year already. There are theoretically ways out of that, but it gets harder and harder. And then the year after that, I mean, if they want to keep DeJounte Murray, whew, like that's an expensive team.
Yeah, I guess I in the mock rookie extensions, we got to an agreement for 17 and a half a year with some reachable incentives to go above that.
Okay.
So that I think, you know, but that was kind of an acknowledgement, I think, of how the organization saw him. I think, you know, when we do that, we're kind of, we're putting our own spin on it, but we're also trying to realistically assess the player in the same way that the organization has and the amount of commitment they've shown to him. And yeah, like, there's a possibility that he's worth this. I don't see much of a possibility of him exceeding it. You know, that's kind of, and I'm sure you could echo this from the front office perspective, that when you do an extension a year early, and particularly a year early for a guy who's had the injury issues that he has, you want to have some upside as a team. And that's maybe where I think maybe there's some upside the last 2 years, because that's when the new TV deal will have kicked in for the last 2 years. But I also, the chances of him being like, oh man, that Hunter contract is such a bargain for them.
Yeah.
Doesn't really seem that there's much likelihood there.
Yeah. And I just don't, like, if he had not been the fourth pick in the draft, I just don't think there's any chance this contract happens.
Well, so here's two other things you can note on this as well from his perspective. Guys who are higher picks are much more willing to play it out in free agency. Number one, just due to the anchoring of being a high pick. But number two, you know, he's making $9.8 million this year. He's going to have made $35 million probably or so over his career, $35 million. Mm-hmm. And then his qualifying offer, as long as he plays, meets star criteria, will be very big as well. And so that he'll have that in restricted free agency. And so you're probably not really going to ever start one of these contracts, unless it's like a Marvin Bagley type, at less than the guy's qualifying offer. And his qualifying offer wouldn't have been 20. Would have been mid-teens, I'm guessing. Because I'm not looking that up. So I don't know. I mean, I think there are a lot of realities of why we got here, but it's also kind of, I think the downside here for the Hawks is greater than the upside in the end.
Absolutely.
The next one I really wanted to talk about, and again, I really, in the pre-pandemic days, the last place I ever went before the pandemic was New Orleans for this Tulane mock negotiation, and we had a bunch of law students come in. I was one of the judges.
I did that last year.
Yeah, it's fun, right?
Yeah, it was really cool.
So one of the things that I really prioritized just was, again, when the two sides can find a solution that works for both of them, particularly when there may be outside forces that might say, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing this, right? There's pressure. But to be able to put that aside and say, hey, here, we're going to work together. Here's something that's going to work for us, particularly given the crazy amounts just in general that we're dealing with. And if you just can step back from that and step back from constantly comparing to the people around you and just say like, hey, this worked for me. Mm-hmm. I actually applaud that. Like, the students, I really gave extra points to people who are able to like, no, like, let's actually find a deal here. And that's what Nasir Little and the Blazers did, despite the fact that this is a shockingly low, I would say, extension. But I also actually applaud Little and his representation for getting a deal that worked for them. And he may just be a happier person as a result of this.
We actually did a deal like this in Memphis.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about
with,
that.
With Quincy Pondexter. And it was the same kind of deal, I think, a little bit. He was a player drafted in the 20s and was definitely, like, had been an important rotation player on our conference finals team. Kind of that just valued the security, like wanted the security of knowing he had the contract. And so was willing to do a deal with us. And so we did a 4-year extension with him. Now the money was, it's going to sound laughable now. We signed it for like $14 million over 4 years, but then that was like, MLE money or close to it or something. Like it was like fairly legitimate money. And I think it worked out for us because it allowed us to manage our luxury tax situation, which was like cutting, you know, very close every single year, pretty well, and not have to sweat that walk year of his. And I think it took a little bit of the pressure off him too. Like he actually ended up getting hurt in his free agent year, or what would have been his free agent year, right? So I don't know what would have been out there for him. And then the security of it helped him again when he was traded to New Orleans, and then had the whole thing with his knee go sideways. And then that, you know, really kind of was the beginning of the end of his career right there. But he had those 4 years that he was getting paid. So I thought it worked out really well for both sides, even though it was not the typical situation where you see an extension signed.
Yeah, so this 4 years, $28 million is, and Dan Feldman did a great analysis of this on Dunked On Prime, and he's also not only doing that in newsletter form every day, he's analyzing the day's news, which he has a great background doing for 9 years with NBC, but he's also actually doing an audio version of that as well. So it's a nice benefit for Dunked On Prime if you guys want to sign up on the special John Hollinger presale. This is the second smallest extension ever as a percentage of the salary cap, but I think it's not even necessarily comparable to some of these because just the money is so big, right? Like the money in the NBA has far outpaced inflation despite the headlines of the last couple of years. And so, I mean, $28 million, that, as Nasir Little said pretty eloquently, I thought, in his media availability afterwards, like that's enough where he feels like he's going to be set for life. He has an injury history. He feels like he's undervalued, but I think he's like, he valued the security. And I think that's just, that's really smart. So, John, do you know who is the lowest player in terms of percentage of the salary cap on a rookie extension?
I had thought it was our deal with Quincy, and I get Dan said it wasn't when I answered that on Twitter. So I'm actually stumped. I can't place it.
Well, I would have been stumped as well. Yeah, Coupon was number two at 4.99%. Nasir is 4.66%. This person was 2.89%. Ronaldo Balkman did an extension with the Denver Nuggets in 2009 after he was drafted by Isaiah Thomas and the Knicks in 2006.
Wow. That, really? Yeah. That happened?
He actually, yeah. No, I didn't even remember that he had extended.
I had,
And he extended actually for, and he wasn't even a high pick either. He extended with a first year salary in the extension of less than what he had made on his rookie scale contract. And wow. Probably a good idea to extend because he was out of the league by the end of the contract.
Yeah. Wow. I had no recollection of that whatsoever.
I grew up in this industry reading about your player profiles of some of these guys in, you know, pro basketball prospectus. I just have to tell you some of the other guys on this list.
Okay.
Costa Kufos, 2011.
Another Nuggets extension, which ended up, he played out the last 2 years of that deal with us in Memphis. We traded to
Roll. He got a nice deal in Sacramento.
Nice deal from the Kings. Yep.
I'll just throw out a few other just great names. Primož Brezić.
He got an extension?
Charlotte in 2004. I think they got him in the expansion draft and then extended him off of that. Brian Cook, the Lakers in 2006. All of these I would have forgotten. The one that came to mind for me was Jeremy Lamb. And that had basically been the only one since we really knew about the 2016 cap spike to be even this low. But that was, 7% of the salary capped. He got $7 million a year.
Yeah,
and now this is...
That was a good deal for Charlotte. I was tangentially involved in that because we traded for Luke Ridnour, and then we traded Luke Ridnour to Charlotte, who then Charlotte, minutes after our trade call completed, traded to Oklahoma City for Jeremy Lamb.
That was the summer of Luke Ridnour, right?
The summer of Luke Ridnour, exactly.
Okay, let's get back on task here. And I guess we'll quickly on Little. This is low, I think. And when we did our mock rookie extensions, I was thinking $14 million a year for him was the least I would have taken. But that was before preseason. He didn't have a great preseason. I don't know how healthy he is coming off that shoulder surgery. He's had some other injuries.
I don't know how much he's going to play either is the biggest thing. Like he's not totally in the rotation. So I think that's another reason to take the security right now. Yeah, when you don't know how much you're going to play and you're walkier, that's tough.
Yeah, and if you're going to be if he's going to be the starting small forward, then yeah. But he's not. He got beat out by Josh Hart, and I think they would have loved to start Nasir Little if they could, but he's just not as good as Josh Hart. And so yeah, I mean, if you're a backup in your fourth year, I think there's just you can't really expect to be getting eight figures a year in restricted free agency. So I think this just, and there's a lot of times, and then you throw in the injury risk as well. Like if you look at kind of A, what his average payday would have been through various scenarios, and then B, that this is so much money that to me, if I were in his position, at least I'd be trying to minimize my downside risk. Like I would, if there's a 20% chance that you're going to get the minimum next year and a 20% chance that you're going to get, maybe $12 million a year or something, I think I'm more worried about that downside than that upside,
Yeah.
Okay, we got a few more of these to get to. Next.
Were you surprised that Grant Williams and Cameron Johnson were not extended?
Grant Williams in particular, because some of the stuff that was bandied about as a number for him, Mike Scotto was saying $15 million. If that's what's out in the media, maybe he would have taken even less than that. I think obviously from the Celtics standpoint, you're probably like, well, is he really going to get more than the MLE next year? And there's probably a decent chance that that's what the analysis would be, but he's going to start for them. I think he's extremely valuable and he makes his three-pointers and, he can defend guys like Giannis and KD, maybe not as good as you would hope, like way out in space against guards, but like a guy who can shoot the ball and defend those types of players, and he's going to start all year. Like that's just get a good player who's like a starter third forward who can play in the playoffs, and you need him against a couple of your biggest rivals. He's a good player. I mean, I would have paid up for the $15 million. They probably could have even got him for less, you would think. So I guess the market has shown that. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I don't like it because you're competing against potential batshit money this summer where, maybe the Pistons or whatever for Rockets come in and say like, hey, we're ready to win now. Like we've decided he's our guy. And, and then the Celtics get blown out of the water because of their luxury tax situation, on a deal over $20 million a year or something that you would say objectively is not a reasonable thing to pay Grant Williams, but one of these other teams might be like, yeah, sure. What the hell? We're going to do it. We think Boston will chicken out on matching it. So we feel good. And I just think they left themselves vulnerable for not a great reason. Because especially the out years on these contracts, like, you're not going to lose on these extensions unless you... Well, there's one team who might lose, but most of them, it's very hard for them to lose on these extensions just because of where the cap is going.
Yeah, and Grant is a young junior. And so, yeah, like you said, I mean, he's their long-term starter at the four. Like, who's going to start for them? I mean, unless they just want to make Jason Tatum their starting four, but they don't want to do that. And then he can also shift to some backup five. Like, it's not even like, oh man, you watch Grant Williams out there and like, oh, his skill level is just wiring you. Players like him, PJ Tucker is another one. I think they're always undervalued because it's about the way that they enable you to play as a team, to have your defensive system while also not killing you on offense. Like, that type of versatility is really important. What they would say is some of his on-off numbers, analytics numbers are not good, not very good. And number two, that guys with a usage as low as he has, I think he was like 13% usage last year, like, those guys just don't get paid. You know, maybe Draymond is maybe the only one you could point to. And even he's handling the ball all the time, getting a bunch of assists. So maybe they feel like there isn't that upside, right? But like you're saying, a team like, say, the Pistons that doesn't have a long-term solution at the four and wants to switch, the Rockets getting another guy in there who'd be good. I mean, that's, and you also said because of their tax situation, it wouldn't take a lot for them to be in his jet. Like, he's a good player. You can get him on a good contract. I think his production is going to exceed that. I would have done the deal if I were the Celtics.
I completely agree. I just think there's going to be too much cap room money sloshing around next summer to take the gamble when you knew you could lock him up at something. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, how far apart were you really? Like, you know, like, oh, we only wanted to pay him 12 or 13, not 14 or 15. That's right. Just the odds of that mattering are so small.
And he also, like, he's a great personality. It helps your culture to reward a guy like that who came up in your system. And yeah, I think, again, like, no injury history. So there's so little downside there to me.
Yeah, yeah, it's just tough to find fault with it.
How about Cam Johnson? We didn't get as much reporting on where he was at. You know, it seemed like kind of about the same as Mikal Bridges was the number that he was looking for. And I think he felt like he had these guys over a barrel because he was clearly going to start this year with the weird Jay Crowder situation. And he shoots it really well. You know, in theory, a 3-and-D guy, although I wasn't too impressed with his defense in the playoffs last year. So, and maybe Phoenix, again, with their tax situation, wasn't willing to go there. I don't know. What do you think of Cam Johnson? I mean, that's probably the biggest thing of just, what do you think of him as a player? Is he just, like, you know, clear, very good starter, or is he not proven that to you yet?
Probably more like a mid-tier starter. He's also, now he's a little older than some of these other guys too, which is the other thing you have to watch out for. That said, I didn't think he was a particularly hard player to value. And when that happens, usually you can come to a deal on these, right? Like, we know what he is as a player. There's not, the upside and downside scenarios of this are pretty contained. And you're paying him for his age 28 through 31 seasons, right? So, like, I mean...
Is that right? Age 28? No. Sorry. This would be... age 27.
This is age 26. 27 to 30 seasons. Like, you more or less know what you're getting, right? So, unless you don't think that is worth $20 million a year, which, I don't know, I kind of think maybe it is worth $20 million a year, but maybe not. Or you just don't think someone else would be willing to pay $20 million a year for that, so it doesn't matter. Which I think that might be the stronger argument for Phoenix's end. Like, realistically, who's going to go over 20 for Cam Johnson next summer? Like, if you just don't see that happening, then there's not a lot of downside risk here to not doing the deal yet.
He's also got the injuries with his hip. And
yeah, there were concerns about that going back to the draft. Yeah.
Right. So that's maybe part of it. And maybe why, I mean, they're probably like, hey, you haven't proven it yet as a starter. And he's like, well, I did play at a starter level last year. I started playing games, put up good numbers, shot 43% from three, defended at least passively. So, like, that type of player is worth $20 million. Maybe this is one where, like, the incentives could have gotten them there. I think maybe a little bit more creativity, maybe even, likely bonuses could have gotten you there, possibly. Because I do think for Johnson's perspective, you don't want to go crazy in terms of your demands because you do have this injury history. So I don't know. This is one where I would like to know exactly where the numbers were. But, if, he was wanted 20 and they're offering 17, I mean, I think that's – you just want to get there at that point.
Yeah, it's hard to totally know without being in each side's huddle. I guess it's a little less befuddling than the Williams situation.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, also, again, Phoenix, their tax issues, that's another big one, right? And they really do have to penny pinch that extra $3 million at least now. And then maybe also just the ownership situation being in flux and just feeling like you can't make long-term commitments. Hopefully that gets solved. And I mean, it's one of these things where if he has a good year, he gets paid. But yeah, I think it is tough to see him getting into really breaking the bank with $25 million a year.
Yeah.
So again, this is a good player who came up on this team. I mean, maybe he's more focused on it because of the age. This is going to be his one big payday. We'll see what happens with him. But I think as long as he stays healthy, he should be really good this year. Speaking of teams that are in enough of a luxury tax crunch that every single dollar matters, the Warriors, Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins.
Yes.
Poole, it's going to be about $123 million guaranteed. The incentives that are likely are mostly team-based. Probably would end up, depending on the team's success, in the 125 to 127 range. Most of the individual incentives, other than All-NBA, which I think is $500K a year, are totally unreachable. So that 140 that was
defensive
bandied about.
Player of the year incentive is cash money.
Well, how's he going to beat out Tyler Hero? That's just like at least have it be something where it's even slightly reachable.
Something connected to at least how the guy plays, right? Like win the scoring title or something, right?
Yeah, make it first team, third team, second team, first team, all NBA or something like that, where it's just where you, if he makes it, you would be totally happy to pay it, right? As opposed to just, that's just literally never going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. And I hate the overuse of the word literally in our society, but I think I can get there on the Jordan Poole, Tyler Hero, Defensive Player of the Year. He got more than Hero. This is kind of where you thought it was going to end up, though, once you heard Hero is going to be between 120 and 125, and they got it done. They also, I think there was additional pressure with the Draymond thing. So this is where it was going to go. It's a lot, but it's less than the max. And for a team, I think that was just the biggest fear. And they at least got him for the 4 years, no funny money offer sheet or anything like that. So this is about what was going to happen. I think when you look at what they got in concert with Andrew Wiggins taking $27 million a year, actually, I think a little bit less than, no, yeah, that was about right, $27 million a year. They got out where they needed to with the combination of those two players.
Well, I mean, Jordan Poole, I think, would have gotten a max offer sheet next summer. I think there was a real risk of that. When you look at how many rebuilding type teams were going to have cap room and Poole's age. So I think Golden State did the right thing to protect themselves here. And obviously he's a really good player for them too. Gives them a little bit of coverage too on the Clay situation going forward, either via injury or contract. Cause he comes off the books at the end of 24, Clay Thompson, but then he's had two serious injuries too, which you can't forget. I thought they got a good deal on the Wiggins extension. Player option for Wiggins is fair. I mean, he's going to be a little older by then, so you don't even know if that'll be a thing. And I mean, to get him at a discount from what he makes this year, I thought that was a good piece of business for them.
And another one where I applaud the parties for getting there too, because Andrew Wiggins be like, hey, I started the All-Star game. I was on balance second best. Well, I'm saying, right, again, this is where you can let these external things get it. I was on balance, the second best player on a championship team, and you want me to take a pay cut when the cap is going up? And I think if he has the same year he had last year, he probably does get more than this. I mean, you want to talk about teams that are always looking for players in his position. I mean, he, to me, is probably has established himself as maybe the best 3-and-D player in basketball at this point, and adds some more offense there as well.
Whoa, Wiggins, the best 3-and-D player in basketball.
Who's better than him?
I mean, I could argue for the guy who plays next to him.
Clay?
Yeah. I mean, true. I mean, you would say, like, Paul George is a better player, but he's asked to do more things, right?
Right, right. Below this clear all-star, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, like, I consider those guys, like, you don't think of them as 3-and-D first. Klay, I don't think, is good enough on defense anymore. And Klay is a clear max contract guy. You know, we're talking about, like, you would think of Wiggins as, he's still in that role player category, right? Like, Klay wouldn't be in.
Okay. So, yeah.
So, who's on that list? Bridges? Mikal Bridges?
Mikal Bridges, Desmond Bane.
Yeah, even Bane. I don't, like, Desmond Bane can't
Bane
guard.
Is more 3 and less D, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, your sine qua non of that, you know, I guess we should say not 3-and-D player, 3-and-D small forward, which is more valuable. Okay. So, you know, you got to be able to guard Luka Doncic and Jason Tatum in the playoffs passably without, I mean, obviously you have help within the team concept, but you're not like, okay, we got to double team unless, you know, penetration occurs or something like that. So to be able to guard those guys and also like shoot passably enough and give you something on offense, like that is such a short list.
Yeah. OG Anunoby.
Yeah. He would be the other one that occurred to me.
Yeah. Some of these other guys are maybe a little more like ball in hand type players, or Dylan Brooks, who's just kind of like a weird hybrid of different things.
Yeah, and he doesn't quite have the size of Wiggins either. So, I mean, there are not that many guys on that list. And, you know, Bridges had kind of set the market for 3-and-D players. Like, you just, and Anunoby maybe before him. And we haven't just seen that many of these guys previously. Like, it's a new archetype at the small forward position. So, yeah, I think he is the best. Maybe he won't continue to be the best, but... And he has been getting better for them, too.
What do you think these extensions mean for Draymond Green?
Yeah, Danny and I talked about that pretty extensively over the weekend on Dunked on Prime. There is going to be an inflection point based on Joe Lacob's comments. I think if Draymond, you know, he probably is going to opt in. Woj said he thinks it's inevitable he's going to opt in. I wouldn't go that far. But $27 million, hard to imagine that he's got that out there next year. Just due to him being more valuable to the Warriors than any other team. You know, maybe a Portland or a Lakers. Like, Lakers will have cap space.
Pistons.
But go ahead, sorry.
Pistons, Michigan State connection.
Yeah, but he's also really damaged his brand. We'll see. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, if he's plays poorly this year and they lose in the first round, then it's like, okay, he's probably done here, right? And they stretch him or they trade him along with the first somewhere. And because Joe Lacob has said he doesn't want to get to that $500 million tax bill, and that's where they would get. They could also just get bailed out maybe by a change in the tax rules a little bit. Like, I don't think they're going to reduce the penalties, but maybe they just, I think it would be fair at this point to increase, like, the gradations, where because the cap is so much higher now than it was, it's not every $5 million that it goes up, maybe
that,
it's every
that
10
would be
now.
Fair, but it would probably only be written into the next CBA and it wouldn't get them out in 23-24.
Well, 23-24 is when it will start, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's the mutual option.
We're thinking deals.
It could start in 23-24. You're right. Because the other way out of this would be to trade Wiseman and just get off of that 12 next year.
I mean, and it's kind of just a 1 year thing where it's just going to be crazy with Klay making the $43 million.
Exactly. And then you're out of the woods for a little bit until the rookie extensions kick in 2 years later.
Yeah. I mean, it makes it less likely that Draymond will stick around, but not impossible. I think, you know, he could play great. Klay could get injured and just be out for the year next year and they just stretch him or something. Or, you know, there's just Wiseman could get hurt and
there's too much water that can go under the bridge between now and then. I agree.
Exactly. So let's see where they're at. Like, if he's essential to them winning a championship, it's hard to imagine that they move on from him. And I mean, that's the thing. That's why he's still on the team. That's why they didn't suspend him. That's like, because they can't win without him. And he was great last night. So, all right, who else do we need to discuss here? Are we good? Did we hit everything?
Yeah, were there any that really grabbed you that came down to the wire? I mean, Brandon Clark, like, that was a nice deal for Memphis, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was about right. He wasn't going to get more than that because he's not a starter.
Exactly. Nobody was going to pay him as a starter, and so this was going to be what the market was going to pay for him, regardless of what he's... because every formula says he's worth more than this, but he just, the reality of the marketplace, he wasn't going to get paid more than this, I don't think.
Yeah. And I thought, like, he was a decent analog for Grant Williams, too. You know, like, I think...
Drafted right after each other, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a little bit older, and, yeah, the analytics, obviously, are all awesome on him, but that's going against backups, and he can close some games. Like, he's a good fit next to Jaren, but he's too thin, really, to be a starting center. And, you know, Nick Claxton was probably another analog for him. I think he's better than Nick Claxton, but that's kind of thinner center, you know, who's can't really bang with guys. So this is about right for him. He got paid. Maybe you would have said you want to do 3 years as him so you get back in the market as a 29-year-old rather than a 30-year-old. I mean, he's so old, too. But this is one chance to get paid. He did. I'm glad for him. This is, you know, basically MLE money for a third big. It's basically right in line. So,
yeah.
Other ones that didn't get done, Rui Hachimura, I think we didn't really expect that one.
No.
Maybe the other one for a guy that a team has really valued is PJ Washington.
That surprised me because I thought he, again, not a super difficult player to value. They're not.
Yeah. What would your valuation have been if he's not a difficult player to value?
I think he would have been, you know, right in that mid to high teens area.
Yeah, $15 million a year.
Yeah, somewhere between.
That's what I was asking for in the mock rookie extensions, and I think it was Dan. Oh no, it was Danny actually who was offering less. But I'm like, he's the starting power forward this year, and he could play some center, not well defensively, but
yeah.
You know, enough. Yeah. Those lineups have been successful. I mean, that's Charlotte. I mean, I don't think they have like huge cap space aspirations next summer anyway. So
it all depends on Bridges.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. That's one where I didn't really have a good sense of like what he was demanding. Maybe if he wanted $20 million a year, then okay, like fine. That's why a deal didn't get done. All right, you want to do a little predictions here? We got like probably 20 minutes left or so.
Yeah, sure.
You and I actually have not had a chance to read yours yet because I've been so busy doing my own stuff. I sent you mine.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any that pop out to you? So this is team predictions, award predictions, where you are just in like big time disagreement.
We already fought over Dallas.
Yes. Yeah, I have them for 52 wins. You're a little bit lower. I have them with the 5 seed.
I think we are...
Well, we got to do this. You pick Philly to win the championship.
Yes. Yeah, that one's looking real good.
Why do you say that?
I just thought they got smoked defensively by Boston last night. Like, even with like their advantage with Embiid, like, where to go? Like, what happened? Like, they're playing Noah Vonleh in the middle, and Philadelphia just couldn't construct enough of an advantage off of that to really change the game any. So I thought that was a very disappointing game for the Sixers.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. But I mean, just what was your thinking? I mean, it's only one game, obviously, but what was your thinking in picking them to win the championship? James Harden's incredible legacy of playoff success.
And transition defense. I thought his transition defense would really be the thing that lifted them.
I mean, that, you know, I think they're a team that's kind of in that mix. I consider them a second tier contender, but there are a lot of teams that have a chance. So, you know, in doing picks, maybe you want to be like, all right, you know, I'm going to go with this team that's like all these teams are kind of equal. So maybe I'll go this direction, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, I mean, I rode with Philly just because I thought Embiid still maybe had a half or a quarter level to go up, and that he could, I thought maybe this would be kind of the year for him. And I thought Harden would be better, and I thought their bench was better, although it didn't really show it last night. Kind of bizarre.
Well, they need to actually play. That would be the beginning of them showing that they're...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not playing Tybull against those two wing scorers when they were getting cooked. I thought it was really interesting that they stuck with Niang instead. Obviously, I'm a big B-ball Paul fan, but I don't think Harrell was like that. That wasn't a differentiating factor, I don't think, either. Just wasn't a good performance all around. They need to, like, the kind of the Harden Maxi chemistry and yin and yang, I think they still need to work out a little bit. It was nice to see Tobias Harris shoot threes off the catch, though.
Yeah, you know, he was okay. My biggest takeaway, I mean, obviously Harden looked pretty good. You know, you can't, he had 35 on like 17 shooting possessions, so you can't complain about that offensively. He was never going to really be that great on defense. I always felt like for Philly, the way that they were going to get to where they need to be in the postseason was Joel could get back to that kind of defensive player of the year level that he was early in his career, particularly with the other weapons they have offensively now.
Yeah.
But he still looked, you know, a little bit more corpulent than you might like, at least for the defensive end.
Yeah, totally.
And so that's like, he needs, and I thought he had a pretty poor defensive game. Like, he needs to be like cleaning up these fires and like moving out on the floor some. And because that started, like, they brought in these guys on the bench who can defend, but, and they're going to close with three basically non-defenders. So like he and they're never going to be a switch team. So he's got to be like Rudy Gobert level defender, I think, for them to get to where they need to be defensively. And I mean, they just got totally lit last night. I mean, that game would have been, I think, their second worst defensive performance John Shun had this of the entire season last year. But again, let's not overreact to one game. But you're just thinking like Embiid was going to be so good, like he was just going to be the best player in the playoffs, and that's how they were going to get there.
Yes, and I thought Boston would have trouble matching up with that. I thought Milwaukee in a roundabout way would, because he takes away Giannis at five from them. So
I agree with. I like how they match up against the Bucks.
So
reasonably well.
So I thought Philadelphia could come in, you know, maybe not have the best record, maybe have the best record, maybe not, but then match up against those other two Titans in the East and get to the finals.
Yeah, my predictions were, you know, Golden State and the Clippers and Boston and Milwaukee as kind of my top four championship contenders. And then I went down to Brooklyn and Philly and Miami, and then Phoenix, Memphis, Denver in the West as my next group. How about any individual awards that you kind of either you think my takes are controversial, or you had one that you haven't seen much elsewhere?
Yeah, my coach of the year take. I picked Joe Mazzulla to win coach of the year. I just think that the narrative is going to be so much in his favor if Boston ends up winning like 55 games. And I think there's a really good chance the Celtics do that.
Yeah, I do think, and they look great last night. I mean, the Noah Vonleh experience aside, although he was still somehow in the positive.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to play smaller against most teams. They had to go bigger against Embiid. Yeah, both they and Golden State just looked like very, very well-oiled machines. The new additions fitting great for Boston. I think that's a reasonable. I mean, I just don't. So when you say coach of the year, you're predicting who will win it, not who like your pick would be.
He's the best coach. No, I'm just saying. He's gonna. Yeah, who will actually win coach of the year? Who will be, you know, he'll have a great narrative behind him, or it'll be some team that wins 20 more games than we expect because they're healthy the whole year and everything goes exactly right.
Yeah, I approach coach of the year as just who do I think contributed the most to his team winning basketball games. And so, for example, Miami, right? They have a good year, but it's kind of priced in that Eric Spoelstra is already really good.
Exactly.
But that's not fair to him, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That, I mean, so the two guys, I mean, Eric Spoelstra and Tyronn Lue have never won. So they're going to have a lot of kind of narrative case behind them, too. I think T. Lue would be another great choice for coach of the year because I think there's a good chance the Clippers have the best record in the West.
This is one Danny and I talked about that it's not an official award. I certainly wouldn't characterize it that way. Who do you think will be the first coach fired?
Yeah, I would probably go Steven Silas there. I think Tom Thibodeau would be the other prominent name. There's some ones where you could see it maybe. And there's always a couple that come out of the blue, obviously. Brooklyn, I think after what happened with KD, it would have to go so bad with Steve Nash now for them to actually fire him. That it's almost like a form of insurance. I could definitely see Atlanta pulling.
Josiah's healthy respect for authority.
Yes.
Unless Steve Nash, it comes out that maybe, you know, he's involved in some kind of government corruption, that then he may not be long.
Yeah. Atlanta with Nate McMillan, I think, is one to watch, certainly.
By the way, if KD really wanted to be traded, how did he not just go for the, like, you know, free Hong Kong approach?
Exactly, right? Like that. That would have been much.
He's got to get paid with that Chinese.
That's the thing, though, right?
Nike, like, too. That's the only problem. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They got all their money in China too, so he has to do something more subtle than that.
Well, I mean, I will say it's we've talked about this too much, but I shouldn't be that glib about it for some of these guys because, like, they are in a difficult situation when you're like, hey, I could fuck up the entire league's money. That's like a lot of pressure. So I do. I do sympathize with the position that they're in, and it's, you know, it's really more the that these corporations that they are involved with have chosen to get involved with an authoritarian regime that's just gonna flip out when one person says the slightest thing against them. Like, that's they didn't necessarily ask to be in that position or understand it. Like, it's that's more that they're just part of this system. So anyway, so sorry for that aside, but I wanted to at least be fair to these guys, despite the fact that the joke was amusing.
Can I give you another name to watch?
Yes, yes.
I think it's I wouldn't put it in like the likely list, but I think it's maybe one that's one that people aren't really thinking about. And that's Michael Malone in Denver, where there's a new GM, more expectations this year with two players coming back and Murray and Porter. If it's I think it'll be a long rope, but I think like if it's not going well in January, I just wonder what happens there.
So the last year of his deal was supposed to be this year. He got a quote multi-year extension on that. So he's got that means he's got at least one more guaranteed year after this one.
Yeah.
And maybe more. Who knows? I mean, you would think it'd be more than that. They're just such a believer in him overall. But yeah, I mean, I guess Tim Connolly was kind of his rabbi there. So maybe it'll be I guess probably priest would be more accurate for that's one where I maybe it could happen, but and their defense doesn't look good in the preseason, but I think they're all such a believer in him that I think it would take just such a massive disappointment, and maybe in the playoffs or something like that. But I'm the one that I'm really have my eye on is Nate McMillan.
Yes, yeah.
Among the teams with expectations, he was my number three. Danny and Dan both had him number one.
I think the expectations are more unreasonable for Tom Thibodeau than they are for Nate McMillan.
You think so? Think that like what are the expectations?
Oh, I think that the Knicks. I don't think the Knicks think they're going 39-43 again.
Yeah, I think they're going to go 42-40. I think they actually have a pretty low downside in that group because of their depth.
I agree with that. Yeah, they're just like they're just an average team. Like they're you know, their starters aren't that good. Their bench isn't that bad. It's just like
It seems like one of those ones where maybe it could happen after the season because he's just so annoying to live with on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, and it might be even one of those ones where you're like kind of surprised because they weren't actually that bad. But if he made it through last year, I think they're going to be like totally decent this year, personally. But maybe the internal expectation, but I think it comes more from the interpersonal dynamics there. And, you know, maybe the not playing the young guys aspect, something along those lines where that seems like kind of,
How dare you bench Cam Reddish again? Yeah. Hey, so the one, I'm looking at your picks here. The one we're totally on board. We're both on the Benny bandwagon.
The Benedict Mathurin?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it seems kind of controversial. He's the number six pick, but if you really go through it, like who are the other realistic candidates? I mean, I got Ed Powell number one, Mathurin number two, Keegan Murray number three. Who else in the top 10, especially with Chet being out now, are you like really expecting to have a huge rookie year that could get into that conversation?
Right. Like, I don't know if Jaden Ivey's going to play enough.
He's probably the only other one.
Yeah.
That really would be in there, but I'm not as much of a believer in him. I know you are, but
Jabari Smith Jr. is more of a long-term play to me. I don't think he's going to have the ball in his hands enough to win an award like this. Chet's already out for the year. Then you got Mathurin and Murray basically after that. And I don't think, you know, the guys who were picked 7-10 or whatever, like I don't see them really getting into it.
No, you're not on the Johnny Davis train?
I was the leader of the Johnny Davis skeptic bandwagon, and so far...
I mean, can that thing even move anymore? Like, do you need, like, a new like, tongue for it or something? Like, it's just collapsed with all the weight?
Super duper dark horse would be Jalen Williams in Oklahoma City, where he might just end up playing 30 minutes a game and putting up numbers.
I think that guy is really good. And I had him in my, did I have him in my top three?
No, you did not. You had Banchero, Benny, and Murray. But
but Jalen would be my four for sure. He's actually the one guy I could see. It's tough for him to get to be number one. Paolo Banchero, I think, is still the guy because you just know he's going to have that huge role. Like, Mathurin and Murray aren't even starting at the beginning of the year, it seems like. But, you know, I think the fact that Mathurin hasn't had a single bad game since the beginning of Summer League might be, Dan Carey might be good. That's, you probably got to accept that. And I liked him, not as much as you, but I liked him draft as well. I think I had him above Ivy on my
board. I had him fifth on my board. I had Ivy third.
What about most improved? Did you do a pick for that?
You know, I've kind of gotten away from doing that just because I'd like, I just think it's a double
because board. It's fucking impossible. Is that why?
I just can't make myself care about it. A and like, yeah, what are we really doing here? Like, who's going to be the surprise second or third year player that we didn't see coming?
Just because by its nature, it defies prediction.
Yeah, yeah.
You just, I guess, like, do you, maybe the process is you start with the list of guys you don't think are that good and then try to figure out who you're wrong about. But or you can go, I mean, the trend recently has kind of been the young star breaking out to really like all-star level that people kind of already liked. So I went with Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton as my top two. Yeah, I think those are both pretty decent ones.
I think that's a pretty good pairing there. I think Jalen Green in Houston could be.
Like, yeah, I like it. I generally try to eschew second-year guys for this award.
And I think a lot of people do, but I think he might, like, his points per game might blow up so much that he just gets it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so you had Philly as your champion. What else do you have happening in the playoffs?
So I had Philly over Boston in the East Finals. I had Golden State over the Clippers in the West Finals.
Oh, man, if it's Golden State against Philly, I mean, I love Golden State. I think they're just, like, they have so much experience against Harden, and I think they are so good at helping on Embiid. Like, if you have good ball movement against Golden State, I think like Golden State always finds a way against these guys defensively who just want to really dominate the ball and teams that don't move the ball a lot. So I mean Golden State looked amazing, I thought, last night, and like it looks like they're gonna go 11 deep. And I mean, they killed the Lakers without even breaking a sweat. I guess maybe we can close with this. After watching last night, what's your feeling on the Lakers?
You know, I was trying not to get too down on them because I thought AD looked pretty good physically.
Yeah.
And we knew the rest of this roster was limited. And at Golden State is, you know, this will be one of the three toughest games on their schedule the whole season, right? So you start there. I think LeBron was right that they do not have enough shooting. Now, some of they did potentially have some shooting that was not available to them with Schroeder being out, not having Thomas Bryant. But
if you're saying Schroeder is going to rescue you from shooting, maybe it's worse than I thought.
I mean, like, they're running lineups out there with Matt Ryan just to get some shooting on the floor. Yeah. That was an exclamation point.
And that guy is like a pretty nasty shooter, but you know, defensively might have some issues. But yeah, I mean, I think the shooting's a problem. I mean, they're 10 of 40. Like, they at least got them up. You know, they're generating them, which they haven't necessarily been able to do in past years. And they'll hit a few more of them, right? I mean, they got guys who hit 33%. I actually thought they looked a little bit better than I would have hoped. Again, I think your point about not overreacting to this game is a good one. I thought their half-court defense looked much improved. I thought AD defensively was really affecting guys around the rim until Golden State just spaced him out, and then it was a problem. But before then, like, most teams can't do that to you. So I think he's looking like he could be a force. I actually thought Westbrook, within his capabilities, was, you know, pretty under control. He was efficient.
One or two arson possessions in this game.
Right.
So I thought that was a positive. Absolutely.
I think that Darvin Ham has brought over like the running ethos from Milwaukee. I think they're kind of getting back to that. Now, how much AD and LeBron and Russ can keep that up, we don't know. But I think some of the support guys could play a little bit better. But I thought like LeBron and AD showed enough to where if they keep playing the way they played in that game, that maybe you do start thinking about making that Russ trade and throwing in the two first rounders because you feel like those guys are good enough to really be top level. So that's the number one thing I was looking for with them. And I thought I saw it. Like I thought they looked pretty decently coached out there. And, you know, I'm not going to go crazy because Lonnie Walker was missing shots. Kendrick Nunn actually I thought looked pretty good.
Yeah, I think getting him back is going to matter for them.
Yeah, he can hit some spot ups. So I wasn't expecting Juan Toscano-Anderson to hit like every 3 points. So I think they're, I mean, do I think they're going to be like top six in the West with this group? No, but I think they shouldn't be like below expectations based on what I saw. Right?
I think there are eight really good teams in the West. And I think the Lakers are team number nine.
Yeah, that's possible. And we'll see. I mean, they looked like a team that I think is going to be over. All right. This was fun. We'll be back in 2 weeks on the free pod. And that'll actually come out a little bit later than the Dunked On Prime version as well, because we want to encourage you to sign up for that. That special presale is going to end in about 12 hours or so. So I encourage you to sign up to that. There'll be a link to that in the show notes on Dunked On Prime. Also for Dunked On Prime, if you are in a special financial circumstance and you need a break on the pricing, there's some information about that in my pinned tweet at Nate Duncan MBA. I wrote a whole letter about the procedure for that. You can send us a quick email and ask for that. If you're in a difficult situation, we trust you to be honest about that. And so we don't want to like totally lose someone overprice if you're in a difficult situation. So please consider that as well. And looking forward to talking to y'all in 2 weeks on the free pod. And tonight, Danny and I will do a wrap up of all of the games on Dunked On Prime. Talk to y'all soon.